Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. This week's show is sponsored by Anne McLean of Blue Pacific Realty. Thank you, Anne, for supporting our work at KCIW. It is because of sponsors like Anne and Blue Pacific Realty and listeners like you that Curry Coast Community Radio can continue to provide quality programming to our area. Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us as we travel to the Indian Ocean, to the island nation of Sri Lanka. This island in the middle of the Indian Ocean has had many names: Lanka, Ceylon, Serendib, Tabrobani, and many more. It is known as the Pearl of the Indian Ocean. People have lived on this island for more than 34,000 years. Even though it is an independent nation, it is strongly connected to India by its history. The largest ethnic group are known as the Sinhalese, and they believe they are descendants of Prince Vijaya, who came originally from India. Sri Lanka is where the Western civilization learned about spices and how to use them. Cinnamon, cardamom, turmeric, mustard, lemongrass, nutmeg, coriander, curry, tamarind, cumin, ginger, and cloves. For further information about Sri Lanka for children on the internet, I suggest www.srilankatailormade.com. We start today with the legend of how it all began. Told by a young student in India, this is the story of how Sri Lanka came to be the island it is today. Here is the island of Sri Lanka. Once there was this huge and tall mountain. It was so high that its peak hid amongst the clouds. It was praised a lot. Even gods made their home on it. Once a god named Subhamanyu and the mountain had a fight. The fight was about who was more important. The mountain said, "Gods make their home on me, and so I'm more important." But Subhamanyu said, "I'm a god. I can blow air, and you will turn into bits and pieces." "I'm more important," said the mountain. "No, I'm more important. After all, I am a god," said Subhamanyu. The fight went on for several days and nights. Finally, one day, Subhamanyu grew really angry and frustrated. He decided to seek help from another god, Narayan, and told Narayan his plan. Subhamanyu went to the mountain and said, "Today your days are over, my friend, for I will break you into bits and pieces." The mountain prayed to God Vishnu to help him. The god Vishnu sent one of his ferocious birds to the mountain. The bird saved the mountain from the blows of Subhamanyu. Subhamanyu had another plan. He called Narayan and told him his idea. Narayan went away and did according to the plan. He shouted, "Save me, someone! Help me, someone!" Subhamanyu's plan worked. The bird flew away in search of the person in trouble. Subhamanyu's next blow to the mountain broke it into chunks of land. It tumbled down and spread out in the middle of the Indian Ocean. And today, the land is known as Sri Lanka. Elephants play a huge role in Sri Lanka, working in the fields, helping with chores, flying in the air. Well, that is probably not true. Here is a traditional story about elephants simply called Man and the Elephant. Once upon a time, man lived in the jungle, next door to the elephant. They went about their daily business together as friends. The elephant would pull up trees for the man to make a shelter. Sometimes he would allow the man, weary from a long walk, to ride upon his back. The man allowed the elephant to eat the rice he cultivated in the fields and would make a fire for the elephant to warm himself beside. They would sit together around the flames, and the elephant would tell the man the long stories of the jungle. One day, the elephant happened upon the man down where the river becomes wide and splashes over the rocks. The man was bathing in a shallow pool and thus was not wearing his woven clothes as usual. "Good morning," said the elephant to the naked man. The man stopped splashing water on his back and turned slowly to face the elephant. "Hello," he replied. There was a short pause. The elephant sensed that he should make conversation, so he stared at the man and said, "How can you walk on just 2 feet, defend yourself without great tusks, and breathe properly?" The man did not reply. Furious, he stomped off out of the forest. He never spoke to the elephant again, and the elephant never understood why. After that, man forgot the language of the elephants. He lived by himself on the edge of the jungle and ate his rice alone. Next, we'll hear a very contemporary story about elephants. Its main character is a gamarala, which is a chief in Sri Lanka. It has the classic fairy tale beginning. In fact, it is actually entitled Once Upon a Time, or Eka Muth Eka Rataka. Once upon a time, a gamarala lived in a remote village in the jungle with his wife and half a dozen assorted kids and his mother-in-law. Life was tough, not only because of his mother-in-law. Foreign aid never reached this part of the country. Most of the foreign aid went towards sustaining politicians. The poor gamarala was at least lucky to have his own rice field. That was why he was the gamarala. Every morning after his cup of tea, strong, black, and with 3.5 sugars, he would wander off to inspect his field. One morning he was surprised to find that the rice field showed what appeared to be crop circles. The gamarala had not heard of crop circles, but he could recognize elephant tracks when he saw them. That night after dinner, he decided to be on wait in the rice field. Soon after dusk, he heard a low rumble, like that of a 4-high bypass turbofan-engined aircraft on low throttle, and looked towards the jungle, fully expecting a huge elephant to emerge. It came as a surprise, therefore, when he saw a large white object in the sky approaching from a northwesterly direction. To his amazement, this turned out to be a white elephant, much bigger than Walt Disney's Dumbo, approaching at a speed of approximately 120 knots, with flaps fully deployed and undercarriage down. The white elephant made a perfect 4-point landing, reversed thrust, and taxied to the rice field, where he set to work on the rice. The stunned gamarala watched this strange phenomenon. He was stunned because it is not every day that gamaralas see white elephants gorging on rice. In the cities, this would not be considered strange. Stranger things happen in cities all the time. Having gorged itself on rice, the elephant eventually took off heavenwards. The same thing happened the next day and the day after. On the third day, nothing happened. The gamarala wondered why the elephant had not turned up when he suddenly realized that it was the Poya day, the day of the full moon. Nothing much happens on the Poya day in Sri Lanka. White elephants don't fly on Poya days. The day after, the flights resumed. The gamarala started thinking. This was obviously an elephant from heaven. It had to be because it was white. It was obviously well-fed and fat, and it looked happy. If I were to grab the elephant's tail in the same way that refugees hide inside the wheel wells of departing aircraft, then I might be able to go to heaven. Heaven must be a great place. No one is poor. Everything is big. Life is easy. The gamarala, of course, was a decent sort of bloke. He did not want to leave his wife or kids behind. He didn't give a toss for his mother-in-law, but the wife might want to take her along as well. Excess baggage, he thought. That night, he told his wife about his experiences and his plan. The conversation started off in the traditional Sri Lankan manner. "Did you hear?" She took a lot of convincing. She thought he was drunk and said, "Shut up and go to sleep." Planning took a few more days, and meanwhile, there were regular flights. On the appointed day, the gamarala and his extended family gathered at the rice field. Because of air traffic problems, the elephant was late by approximately 50 minutes. Those were anxious minutes. The gamarala drank arak to calm his nerves. Eventually, the elephant landed and went through its usual routine. The turnaround time was short. Just before takeoff, the gamarala grabbed the elephant's tail. Mrs. Gamarala grabbed her husband around his waist, in pillion rider fashion. The kids grabbed their mother and each other in order of seniority, with mother-in-law bringing up the rear in conga line fashion. With a gentle pushing of the throttles and flaps 10 degrees, the white elephant took off into the night sky with a loud but reassuring rumble. Jumbos can carry a decent payload, and the slightly increased takeoff weight did not bother the Elephant at all. At 2,000 feet, the lights of Colombo were clearly visible on the port side. At 4,000 feet, there was a bit of turbulence, and the Gamarola wished that he hadn't drunk that much arak in the departure lounge. At 6,000 feet, the Jumbo cleared the low cloud ceiling into the clear, moonless sky, and having received ATC clearance, settled into a steady climb to flight level 33. A faint glow of twilight was visible to the west. The east was dark. The stars were bright. Ah, thought the Gamarola, very soon we will be in heaven. As soon as I get a half-decent job, even if it is with McDonald's, I'm going to buy a stretch limo. 10,000 feet, 11,000 feet, 11,500 feet, and then disaster struck. Unknown to the Gamarola, the Elephant had been gorging itself on overripe jackfruit that morning. Unfortunately, overindulgence on overripe jackfruit can lead to flatulence. With the rapid rate of ascent and the consequent rapid drop in atmospheric pressure, the intestinal pressures had increased to dangerous levels. Passing 11,800 feet, suddenly and without warning, the Elephant suffered explosive decompression, and the Gamarola, who was hanging onto the tail, got a face full. Oxygen masks did not deploy, as oxygen masks only deploy at altitudes above 12,000 feet. The surprised Gamarola said, "Ah!" which was appropriate under the circumstances. In his surprise, he let go of the Jumbo's tail, which was inappropriate under the circumstances. The Gamarola and his whole entourage went into a free fall in the night sky. But then, this was the 21st century. Even Gamarolas of remote Sri Lankan villages had heard of parachutes. With a shout of, "Geronimo!" or rather the Sri Lankan equivalent of Geronimo, which is "Adu!" the Gamarola and his extended family entered the free fall. "Dad, this is great!" "Shut up," said the Gamarola through his teeth. The Gamarola took control of the situation. They were falling through 10,000 feet and then through 9,000 feet. At 8,000 feet, they deployed their chutes. The white canopies mushroomed in the night sky and they wafted slowly earthwards. "Daddy, are we there yet?" "Hey, Dad, are we going back home?" "Mission aborted." "Shut your faces, all of you," said the Gamarola. "None of your smart comments." And the exasperated Gamarola slightly gritted his teeth. The landing was rather uneventful, except that the Gamarola, who was a rather big fellow, landed awkwardly in the muddy rice field and ended up waist-deep in mud. They pulled him out with the harness of the chute. Later that night, after a good scrub and wash, the Gamarola sat in his favorite chair in the veranda and contemplated the day's events. The fireflies were flitting around the darkness, flashing their navigation lights. The mosquitoes avoided him. Mosquitoes don't like the smell of elephant farts. The kids were running around in a conga line circle, making loud elephant fart-type noises in an obnoxious fashion. "They are making fun of me," he thought. His gloomy thoughts were interrupted by one of the kids. "Daddy, if heaven is such a great place, why does the elephant have to come down to earth for its meals?" "Good point," thought the Gamarola, brightening up and patting the kid on the head. Bright kid, he thought. Life on Earth is not too bad after all. Now we'll hear about a frog prince, but so different from the one we know here in the West. I've kept it in the original translation, which has some quaint wording. This one's full of adventure, but be prepared. The ending is so very sad. Here is the Sri Lankan story of the frog prince. At a city, there is a certain king. A widow lives at a house near his palace. She subsists by going to this royal palace and pounding rice there. Having handed it over, she takes away the rice powder and lives on it. During the time while she was getting a living in this way, she bore a frog, which she reared there. When it was grown up, the king of that city caused this proclamation to be made by beat of tom-toms. "I will give half my kingdom and goods amounting to an elephant's load to the person who brings the jeweled golden cock that is at the house of the ogress Rakshashi." The frog took the bundle of rice and, hanging it from his shoulder, went to a wild date tree, scraped the leaf off a date spike, and strung the rice on it. While going away after stringing it, the frog then was transformed into a very good-looking royal prince, and magically, a horse and fine clothing for him made their appearance there. Putting on the clothes, he mounted the horse and went on till he came to a city. Hearing that he had arrived, the king of that city prepared quarters for this prince to stay at, and gave him ample food and drink, and then asked, "Where art thou going?" "The king of our city has made a proclamation by beat of tom-toms that he will give half his kingdom and an elephant's load of gold to the person who brings him the jeweled golden cock that is at the Rakshashi's house. Because of it, I am going to fetch the jeweled golden cock." The king, being pleased with the prince on account of it, gave him a piece of charcoal. "Should you be unable to escape from the Rakshashi while returning after taking the jeweled golden cock, tell this piece of charcoal to create a fire fence and cast it down," he said. So, thanking the king, he took the charcoal and went to another city. The king of that city, in that very manner having prepared quarters and made ready and given him food and drink, asked, "Where art thou going?" The prince replied in the same words, "I am going to bring the jeweled golden cock that is at the house of the Rakshashi." That king, also being pleased on account of it, gave him a stone. "Should you be unable to escape from the Rakshashi, tell this stone to create a mountain and cast it down," he said. Taking the charcoal and the stone which those two kings gave him, he went to yet another city. The king, also in that very manner, having given him quarters and food and drink, and asked, "Where art thou going?" the prince in that very way said, "I am going to bring the jeweled golden cock." That king also, greatly pleased, gave him a thorn. "Should you be unable to escape from the Rakshashi, tell a thorn fence to be created and cast down this thorn," he said. On the next day, he went to the house of the Rakshashi. She was not at home. The Rakshashi's daughter was there. That girl, having seen the prince coming and not knowing him, asked, elder brother, where are you going?" "I am not going anywhere whatever. I came to beg of your hands the jeweled golden cock which you have got." To that she replied, "Elder brother, today indeed I am unable to give it. Tomorrow I can. Should my mother come now, she will eat you. For that reason, come and hide yourself." Calling him into the house, she put him in a large trunk at the bottom of 7 trunks and shut him up in it. After a little time had passed, the Rakshashi came back. Having come and seen that the prince's horse was there, she asked her daughter, "Whose is this horse?"
"Nobody's whatever. It came out of the jungle, and I caught it to ride on."
The Rakshashi, having said,
"If so, it is good,"
came in. While lying down to sleep at night, the sweet odor of the prince having reached the Rakshashi, she said to her daughter,
"What is this? A smell of a fresh human body is coming to me."
"What, mother? Do you say so?
You are constantly eating fresh bodies. How can there not be an odor of them?" The Rakshashi, taking those words for the truth, went to sleep. At dawn on the following day, as soon as she arose, the Rakshashi went to seek human flesh for food. After she had gone, the Rakshasa daughter, taking out the prince who was shut up in the box, gave him advice on how to take away the jeweled golden cock.
"Elder brother, if you are going away with the cock, take some cords and fasten them round my shoulders and tie me down. Having put them round me, take the cock, and having mounted the horse, go off. When you have gone, I shall cry out. Mother comes when I give 3 calls. After she has come, loosening me will occupy much time. Then you will be able to get away."
The prince tied the Rakshasa daughter, and taking the jeweled golden cock, mounted the horse, and making it bound quickly, came away. While she was calling out, the Rakshashi came. After she looked about, she found that the Rakshasa daughter was tied, and the jeweled golden cock had been taken away.
"Who was it? Who took it?"
"I don't know who it was."
After that, she very quickly unfastened the Rakshasa daughter, and both of them came running to eat that prince. While going, the prince turned round and on looking back saw that the Rakshashi and the Rakshasa daughter were coming running to eat the prince. He cast down the thorn which the king of the third city gave him. A thorn fence was created. Having jumped over it, they came on. When he had put down the piece of stone which the king of the second city gave him, a mountain was created. They sprang over that mountain also and came on.
He cast down the charcoal which the king of the first city gave him, having told a fire fence to be created. A fire fence was created. While jumping over it, both of them were singed so badly that they finally had to turn around and go home. The prince journeyed on. When he arrived at the date tree on which he had threaded the rice, he removed all that dried up rice and began to eat it. On coming to the end of it, the person who was like that prince again became a frog. The clothes that he was wearing, and the horse, and the jeweled golden cock vanished. The frog had nothing. Even the golden cock was gone. Sadly, out of grief on that account, that frog died at that very place. Here's a story, a legend, but also a history. There are two kings in this story, and their names are almost identical. It is called Queen Vihara Mahadevi. Sri Lanka was once ruled by a very harsh king named Kalantisa. It is said that King Kalantisa unjustly suspected a high priest of treason and had him murdered in a cauldron of boiling oil, throwing the body into the sea. This wicked deed angered the sea gods, and they cast powerful spells that caused the ocean to rush in and flood the land. The people grew restless and scared, pleading to the king for help. He turned to the astrologers for help. However, to his dismay, all they declared was that the only way to placate the sea gods was to sacrifice the most beautiful woman in the land, the king's only daughter, Devi. Hearing this, Devi came forward and told the king that she would sacrifice herself for her country. A few days later, a golden boat was built, and Devi was ceremonially sacrificed to the sea gods. As soon as she set off, the sea suddenly turned calm again, and the water receded. However, she was gravely missed by her parents and people, who were upset over the loss of their brave princess. Fortunately, the winds were favorable to her, and the boat drifted south, landing in Hambantota. The people of Hambantota saw the boat approach and ran to inform their king, Kawantisa. When Kawantisa went to greet a tired and hungry Devi, he fell in love at first sight and took care of her and made her his queen. Devi was a devoted queen, who loved her religion and her country. She gave countless almsgivings and assisted sick monks. She was a brave woman who even had clever fighting skills, which assisted her people in war. She gave birth to two sons who grew up to be great leaders of their nation. To this day, Queen Vihara Mahadevi herself is recognized as the greatest heroine of Sri Lanka. Here are two short stories that tell of how Sri Lanka came to be, what lived on the island before people, and how the people of the world came to settle there. The first one is called Sinhabahu. Long ago in the land of Vanga in India, the king of Vanga had a beautiful daughter, whom fortune tellers believed would one day be kidnapped by a lion. One day, as she was riding in a carriage near Lala country, a lion attacked and kidnapped the princess, taking her away to a cave which he blocked with a huge rock. Years went by, and all efforts to find the princess failed. She eventually accepted her life with the lion, and a few years later gave birth to twins, a son, Sinhabahu, who had hands that resembled the paws of a lion, and a daughter, Sinhasivali. As they grew older, Sinhabahu asked his mother why they were kept in the cave like prisoners, and his mother told him what had happened to her so many years earlier. Saddened by her fate, Sinhabahu was determined to break the cave entrance. One day, when the lion had gone out to hunt, Sinhabahu pushed away the rock and escaped with his mother and sister. The king of Lala country was elated to see the long-lost princess return. However, when the lion returned, he was outraged to find his family missing and set out to find them, attacking villages and scaring the people of Lala as he went. The king of Lala country asked Sinhabahu to stop the lion. The encounter did not go well, and Sinhabahu accidentally pierced his own father's heart with a bow, killing him. For his heroic deed, the king of Lala country built a city for Sinhabahu, named it Sinhapura, and crowned him king of the city. Years later, Sinhabahu married and had a son named Vijaya. Prince Vijaya was a mischievous young man with an unsuitable group of friends. People often complained to Sinhabahu about his son's behavior and the trouble that caused them, leaving Sinhabahu no choice but to banish Prince Vijaya from Sinhapura. The prince and 700 of his friends were given a ship and asked to leave. After sailing for several days, they landed in Sri Lanka. When Prince Vijaya reached the island of Sri Lanka, they met a female devil named Kuveni, with whom, after a bad start, they made friends with. Prince Vijaya and Kuveni later got married, and they had a son and a daughter. Years later, Prince Vijaya was able to subdue all the devils in the country with Kuveni's help. He became the king of Sri Lanka and gave up his early playful life, became very responsible, and ruled the country justly. This second legend tells of the first residents of Sri Lanka before people lived there. They are quite terrifying. Here is the story of Rama and Sita. Prince Rama was a great warrior who was married to a beautiful goddess named Sita. They lived happily in one of the most luxurious kingdoms, and Prince Rama was destined to take over the throne after his father's reign. Unfortunately, his wicked stepmother had tricked his father into sending him away into the forest, for she wanted the throne to be given to her son, Prince Rama's younger half-brother. Before he left the palace, Rama begged Sita to stay in the palace while he was exiled to the forest. However, she was deeply in love with Rama and declared it was 1,000 times better to be in the forest with him than in the richest palace without him. So, Rama and Sita prepared to leave the palace together and lived a peaceful, simple life in a small cottage in the heart of the forest. However, their peace was soon disturbed as the beautiful Sita was spotted by the terrible demon king, Ravana. Ravana was frightening inside and out, with a terrible temper and 20 arms, 10 heads, eyes as red as coal fires, and a mouthful of yellow fangs. As soon as Ravana saw Sita, he immediately decided to kidnap her and make her his wife. One day, as Rama and Sita were enjoying a walk in the forest, they came across the most beautiful golden deer. Sita was so delighted by the little deer that she begged Rama to catch it for her. Rama hesitated, sensing it was some sort of demonic trick. However, due to Sita's adamant pleas, he agreed and went after the deer. Ravana was watching, and as soon as he saw Sita alone, swooped down and swept her into his chariot, hurriedly taking her away to the island of Lanka. Despite her terror, Sita thought quickly and scattered her jewelry on the forest ground as a trail for Rama to follow. In the midst of the forest, Rama tracked down the beautiful deer. But when he caught it, it turned into a terrible demon that broke away from Rama's grasp and flew into the sky. Prince Rama ran back to where he had left Sita, his heart filled with dread to find her gone, and he searched frantically until he came upon the trail of jewelry. He followed this golden trail until he met Hanuman, the powerful monkey king. Hanuman decided to help Rama find Sita and sent a message to all the monkeys and other animals worldwide to help in the search. Hanuman himself went to the island of Lanka, where Sita was being held prisoner after she had refused to marry the evil Ravana. Hanuman went back and returned with Rama and a great army of animals. The animals fought Ravana's evil army of demons in a long and terrible battle, until at last Rama faced Ravana. Rama took up his special bow and arrow that had been made by the sky god. He chanted a special prayer and shot, piercing Ravana's chest in a blinding flash, and Ravana fell dead in an instant. The entire world rejoiced as the reign of the demons was over, and Rama and Sita returned to their own country to rule and live happily ever after. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll be traveling to just a short distance, really, across our great country to the eastern seaboard. This is where our early settlers first made their homes. This is also where some of our greatest folk heroes and legends were first created. This is Guima saying goodbye and happy reading.